Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Narayanam Namaskritya. Naram Chaiva Narottamam. Devim Saraswatim Vyasam. Tato Jayam Udirayan. Before reciting the Srimad Bhagavatam, which is our very means of conquest, let us offer our respectful obeisances unto Lord Narayan, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Nara Narayan Rishi, the supermost human beings, Mother Saraswati, the goddess of learning, and unto Srila Vyasadeva, the author. Nasta Praeshu Abhadreshu Nityam Bhagavata Sevaya Bhagavati Uttama Shloke Bhaktir Bhavati Naishtiki. By regularly attending classes in Srimad Bhagavatam and rendering service to the pure devotees, all that is troublesome to the heart is practically destroyed, and loving service to the glorious Lord is established as an irrevocable fact. Reading this morning from chapter 1 of the second canto, text 18. Nityayad vishayevyokshan Manasa buddhi sarati Manak karma bhirakshiptam Subharte dharayetiya Niyachet vishaye vyokshan Manasa buddhi sarati Manak karma bhirakshiptam Shubharte dharayedhiya. Nityayad vishayevyokshan Manasa buddhi sarathi Manak karma bhirakshiptam Subharte dharayediyam. Niyachet vishaye vyokshan Manasa buddhi sarathi Manak karma bhirakshiptam Subharte dharayediyam. Niyachet vishaye vyokshan Manasa buddhi sarathi Manak karma bhirakshiptam Subharte dharayediya. Nayachet vishaye vyokshan Manasa buddhi sarathi Manak kama bhirakshiptam Subharte dayadiham. Anyone else? Niyachen.
Niyachen.
withdraw
vishayebhyaha
from sense engagements,
akshan
the senses,
manasa
by dint of the mind,
buddhi
intelligence,
sarathi
driver,
manaha
the mind,
karmabhi
by the fruit of work,
akshiptam
being absorbed in,
shubharte
for the sake of the Lord,
tarayet
hold up,
dhiya
in full consciousness. Translation and purport by Srila Prabhupada. Gradually, as the mind becomes progressively spiritualized, withdraw it from sense activities, and by intelligence, the senses will be controlled. The mind too absorbed in material activities can be engaged in the service of the personality of Godhead and become fixed in full transcendental consciousness. Let's do I say, you say, okay?
Gradually,
as the mind becomes progressively spiritualized,
withdraw it from sense activities.
And by intelligence,
the senses will be controlled.
The mind too absorbed
in material activities
can be engaged
in the service of the personality of Godhead
and become fixed
in full transcendental consciousness.
Purport. The first process of spiritualizing the mind by mechanical chanting of the pranava, omkara, and by control of the breathing system is technically called the mystic or yogic process of pranayama, or fully controlling the breathing air. The ultimate state of this pranayama system is to be fixed in trance, technically called samadhi. But experience has proven that even the samadhi stage also fails to control the materially absorbed mind. For example, the great mystic Vishvamitra Muni, even in the stage of samadhi, became a victim of the senses and cohabited with Menaka. History has already recorded this. The mind, although ceasing to think of sensual activities at present, remembers past sensual activities from the subconscious status, and thus disturbs one from 100% engagement in self-realization. Therefore, Shukadeva Goswami recommends the next step of assured policy, namely to fix one's mind in the service of the personality of Godhead. Lord Sri Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, also recommends this direct process in the Bhagavad Gita 6:47. One should at once engage himself in the transcendental loving service of the Lord by the different devotional activities of hearing, chanting, and so forth. If performed under proper guidance, that is the surest path of progress, even for the disturbed mind. Translation again, please. Gradually, as the mind becomes progressively spiritualized, withdraw it from sense activities, and by intelligence the senses will be controlled. The mind too absorbed in material activities can be engaged in the service of the personality of Godhead and become fixed in full transcendental consciousness. This is very, very useful and practical advice for all aspiring devotees. Look how Sukadev is speaking in the invocative, or he's giving prescriptive directions to Parikshit Maharaj. Withdraw the mind from sense activities. So Sukadeva is asked, Parikshit is asked, what's the duty of one who's about to die? And Sukadeva is saying, withdraw your mind from sense activities as it becomes progressively spiritualized. So in the class on Friday, what were we discussing? Jagannath Puri now? What's that? Omkar, yeah. Was that, I believe it was Friday, wasn't it? Yes.
Yes, we're talking about AUM, the supreme combination of letters, Omkar. So this is the mechanical yogic process, which is the beginning stage of spiritual life. As the mind becomes progressively spiritualized by fixing it in Om and just withdrawing externally from one's situation, then by intelligence the senses will be controlled. Now, in the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna describes these topics in great detail. The Lord describes that Bhumir apo nalovayu kamano buddhir evacha ahankara iti yame bina prakritir ashtida. There are eight varieties of material energy, and they're called bina prakriti, which means separated. So there's a relationship between God and these energies, like the relationship between a cow and her milk. The milk is nothing but the energy of the cow, but it's separated. So in the same way, this energy is nothing but Krishna. The material energy is nothing but Krishna, but it's separated from him. So when the gopis were asking Krishna, when Krishna rather sent a message to the gopis about how they could remember him, he told them that, after all, everything you see is my energy and therefore is me. So they didn't buy this argument. But these separated material energies, eight in number, have five gross and three subtle. So the gross ones are earth, water, fire, air, ether. Okay. Now, if you go to the chemistry department at the University of Florida and say, so there are five material elements, what will they say? What's that? This is primitive. Some primitive, archaic idea from some ancient civilization. We, in fact, have over 180? Yeah, 115, but it's increasing all the time. They're discovering new ones. There was a scientist who was debating with a devotee one time, and he said that, and he rattled off a number of recently discovered elements and said that God was not competent to create these. So man had to discover them. And many of them exist for only a fraction of a second in a atom splitting chamber, right? And anyway, these are they're basically divisions of these five gross elements, the 118 or whatever. There are earth, those associated with earth in a solid form, those that are associated with air in a gaseous form, those associated with a liquid form. And ether is the most subtle of these gross material elements. It is the stuff through which radio waves could transmit, right? This is kind of inexplicable phenomenon. Like when we speak, it creates a vibration that travels through what? Air. So the air vibrates, and then it strikes our eardrums, and then it vibrates, and then we can understand the sound. But when radio waves are transmitted, they don't go through air, but they go through something. So this is ether. It's a very subtle element of the five material elements, the gross elements. It's the most subtle. So there are sciences associated with each one of these. The earth sciences, such as geology. There are water sciences, such as chemistry. There are air sciences, such as meteorology. Fire sciences, such as, I guess you could say, nuclear physics. Combustion. And the science of ether has to do with mantras. It is not a really well-known science in modern times, but there is a science associated with it, subtle. Then there is a science of mind. What is that called? Psychology, right. How does a person think? Is a person a product of nature or nurture? You know, and the study of this is psychology. Then the science of intelligence, what is that? Philosophy, yes. Right. Philosophy is the science of intelligence. How? Philo means life, right? So, study of life. Okay, should I approach life this way or this way? Just withdrawing oneself from reactionary type of behavior, which would be associated with psychology. So, psychology, philosophy, and finally, false ego. What is the science of false ego? Krishna consciousness, exactly, yes. The science of false ego means to examine and understand the moment at which we start identifying with this bag of material elements called the material body. And when we identify with it, that ego, that false identification, that is the beginning of all the other problems. Like Arlo Guthrie said in his song, for those of you who remember the 60s, and that's when all the problems began. That's when all the trouble began. So, as soon as we identify with the body, then this is described in the Shastras, what's it, Hari Bhangsa, anyway, this one verse that says that the moment one identifies with matter, Maya is waiting to grab. Remember this verse? No. So, Nigata something, da 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 da. The moment we identify with matter, then Maya is saying, okay, come on in. Here's your, this sense gratification. And this, you have these, now you have these five knowledge acquiring senses. The tongue, the ears, the eyes, the nose, and skin. So, enjoy yourself. Here are the sense objects, taste, touch, sight, sound, and feel, to engage your senses in. So all of these are components of the material creation. The senses, their objects, and these eight gross elements, or eight gross and subtle elements. So, Maya is ready to invite us the moment we make that decision. So, in this verse, Prabhupada takes what is being presented, which is a very gradual process. Sukadeva is starting in a very, very gradual way. Starting with the yoga system, then he goes into the universal form, kind of pantheism. But Prabhupada adds a bit here. The mind too absorbed in material activities can be engaged in the service of the personality of Godhead and become fixed in full transcendental consciousness. So, as the mind becomes spiritualized, withdraw it from sense activities. In other words, stop the process of Maya's invitation. See how this is progressive? You've identified with the body, now you're engaging the senses and their objects. Okay, so stop that. And then, by intelligence, the senses will be controlled. So this is one of the impossible things about Krishna consciousness for the person who doesn't have a taste. You know, impossible to understand. How do you follow four regulator principles? You know, how could somebody possibly live like that? Prabhupada told a story about Lord Zetland, who was the British High Commissioner of India during the British Raj. So he took some interest in the Gaudiya Math of Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati and asked, so can you make me a Brahmin? Because this is the bold teaching. This is the unique thing about the mission of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. It was for everybody. Whereas previously, high-class Brahmins only would be eligible for spiritual realization. Okay. So Chaitanya Mahaprabhu broke that down. Bhaktisiddhanta was carrying it on in the Gaudiya Math. So Lord Zetland said, oh, can you even make me a foreigner into a Brahmin? And Prabhupada's godbrother, who was speaking with, said, yes, we can do that. You just have to follow these four regulator principles. No meat eating, no gambling, no illicit sex, and no intoxication. To which Lord Zetland replied, I would rather die. Impossible. So, how is it possible to control the senses? Remarkably, it's not only possible, but it's very easy. It's very easy when one is enjoying a superior pleasure. The mind too absorbed in material activities can be engaged in Krishna's service and become fixed in full transcendental consciousness. So we are all serving somebody. The science of the false ego just tells us, Krishna consciousness just tells us, turn our serving propensity from this bag of bones and blood to the beautiful form of Lord Krishna. And let the body be treated as an ancillary concern, a secondary consideration. It's not that one has to deny the needs of the body. This is the misunderstanding that people have about our philosophy. There was a professor in a Christian college in Pennsylvania who used to invite my dear godbrother Rabindra Sarup Prabhu to give classes once a year. So as he would always greet him in the parking lot and walk him to the classroom. And as they walked to the classroom, he would pass by the Hinduism display. And there in the Hinduism display was a bed of nails. A bed of nails. So sometimes in India, yes, yogis practicing severe austerities will lie on a bed of nails to show their detachment from their body. And they will lie out with a begging bowl and ask people to give some money. That or do some other kinds of austerities. So the professor would kind of glance at this bed of nails while walking by, as Rabindra put it, as if to say, in my religion, we don't have to do stuff like this. And that this indeed is an ethic in Christianity. It is not by works alone. This is one of the biblical verses. It is not by works alone that one is saved, but rather by what? By grace. So that taken to an extreme means basically do whatever you want as long as you've got the grace of God, of Jesus, right? So there's a contradiction. They leave that part out. Yeah. Faith without works is dead. There was once a Christian friend who was passing out these tracts. They were actually little Christian mantra cards and in the shape of a credit card. And it says, on the front it says Visa. And on the back it says, charge all your sins to Jesus. So it's all about grace. It's not our own, in other words, it's not our own austerities lying on the bed of nails that saves us, but you just have to get the grace of God. And as long as you believe and commit to believing, then you're saved. Okay? And even if you don't fall down, I mean, even if you fall down and don't follow any principles, that's all right if you believe. So, they say that the spirit is willing, but the flesh is weak. So your intention is good, as long as you have that good intention, even if you're unable to control your senses, it's all right. See? In reality, the flesh is willing, but the spirit is weak. The Bhagavad Gita says, Krishna says in the Gita, that Vishaya Vinivartante Niraharasya Dehinam. Nobody can stop doing something pleasurable unless they replace it with something more pleasurable. So in this case, using the intelligence and acting on the intelligence is actually a great source of enjoyment and happiness in life. Elsewhere in the Gita, Krishna talks about contemplating the objects of the senses. By letting the mind get out of control, being too materially engaged, then it leads to lust. Because sangak sanjayate kama. By contemplation, one naturally wants to associate with the objects of the senses. And then, kama krodha bijayate. Kama leads to krodha, which is what?
Anger.
From lust, one gets frustrated. When you don't get the object of your desire, then there's frustration. And then krodha bhavati samoha. One becomes confused. Samoha smriti vi brahma. And then one, what's that? Memory, yes, memory is, smriti is affected. You can't remember what is your best interest. Smriti bhavati samoha, smriti nasyad, buddhi nasyad. Yes, smriti bhramsa. When the memory is affected, then buddhi nasha. One has no intelligence. Like people with Alzheimer's. Anyone have ever seen the tragedy of somebody with Alzheimer's? Oh, with Alzheimer's disease? You lose the memory. You've seen this. You've experienced it. What was it like? Anyone want to share a little? Can you use the mic and just tell us a bit? Anybody? Anybody ever have an experience when somebody have lost their memory?
Yeah, my grandmother had Alzheimer's, and I remember we went up for her 90th birthday, and we walked in the room, and she's, oh, what a surprise, you know, nice to see you, you know. And then we come back the next day or even later the same day, and it's like, oh, what a surprise, nice to see you. She thought I was my father, you know, which I guess isn't too bad because there's some resemblance, you know.
Huh. Interesting. When the memory is gone, obviously the intelligence is lost. There's no discrimination. There is no ability to make thoughtful decisions. So losing one's memory is a great loss indeed. And all that begins with contemplating the object of the senses. When we're chanting japa, there's a great time to just study the condition of our minds. You know, if our mind is materially absorbed, then it will be running all over the place. I'm sure that none of you have ever experienced, but it happens to me regularly. You know, you'd be chanting, you're sitting here in Gainesville chanting, and the next moment you're on Jupiter just looking at the sky or something. Or you're thinking about something 100 years ago or 100 years in the future. Or thinking about something about an hour and a half from now when breakfast will be served. Or whatever. You know, the mind is just runs all over the place. And that is because of our habit of contemplating the object of the senses. So the Lord is very kind in that even if we fail to remember him while we're practicing japa, that if we just continually bring it back to the sound of the mantra, and in time the mind does become occupied in the nama, rupa, and lila. Yes, the name, the sound of the brain, the form of the Lord and his pastimes. So in the meantime there's seva rupa, that we can think of Krishna and his form of devotional service, which is much easier for us to do because that's active and all the senses can be engaged. If the senses are engaged, then the mind will follow. This is the subtle process of bhakti yoga that people, the subtle science of Krishna consciousness, really, that people cannot understand unless they've tasted it. So, Prabhupada speaks about samadhi in this purport. Samadhi, you want to just scroll down one or two frames, please? The first process is, this mechanical omkar, om, om, and then controlling the breath. Om pranayama, which is mechanically gets the mind to slow down. And then, by that mechanical system, one can come to the point of samadhi. So what does samadhi mean? What is D? Anyone know? Intelligence, yes. Intelligence. So, and sama? Equal or equipoise, right? So fixed intelligence, where one is not affected by externals. So, but is very peaceful within and fixed within. So samadhi is achievable through the mechanical system and also through, which is really impersonal meditation. Although omkar is Krishna, to chant om is generally done by people who do not have devotion for God in their hearts, but want a spiritual buzz. Okay? You know, there's a real motive there for spiritual experience. So, not pleasing God. So, even if they rise up to the stage of samadhi that way, as Prabhupada points out, through many histories, they cannot remain there. In the Bhagavatam, we find Aruya Krishchena Param Padam Tata Patantirho. You can rise up to samadhi by mechanical and personal meditation, but inevitably you'll fall down again. Prabhupada compared it to cockroaches in a urinal. You know, the impersonalists. None too flattering analogy, but the cockroaches will run up the side of the urinal, but because it's slick, they will always fall down again. Just to help. No, but this will help you remember the philosophical concept. Aruya Krishtena Param Padam Padantyato. Now, it's unflattering because the motive, actually, and the reason they fall down also, is that the motive is impure. It is a Buddha, what is it? Aruya Krishtena Param Padam. Avishuddha Buddhaya, yes, Avishuddha Buddhaya. They're impure intelligence. In other words, they don't have any purpose in their meditation but to get high and to become powerful. And then they'll decide what to do with that wisdom and that power. Right? And the motive is very impure. The motive is crooked. Let me get something out of this. Whereas enlightened self-interest in devotional service means, let me please Krishna. Because I know if Krishna is pleased, I'll be pleased. So I don't have to worry about my senses, my pleasures, my happinesses. I know that they will be taken care of. Just like an animal that is sold in the marketplace becomes the property of the master. And if the master is very kind and compassionate, then the animal has no problems, nothing to worry about. He knows that I'm going to be taken care of. So I'm free, therefore, to just give good service to my loving master. So in the same way, this is our relationship with Krishna. If we just serve Krishna and please Krishna, then all of our needs will be met. More importantly, we attain all of these processes of yoga that we're reading about through these mechanical systems. Here's yet another incredible feature of Krishna consciousness. It's not that we have to give up pranayama or omkar meditation or the benefits of any of these things, but we get them all automatically, because they're just byproducts of devotion. See? So we can experience samadhi and Krishna consciousness. And I wanted to ask you this morning, when do you become most samadhi-like in your experience of Krishna consciousness? Olivia? Somebody can manage the mic for me. What is that? Sankirtan, okay. Can you describe that experience?
It's just when I find myself most absorbed in hearing the names of Krishna and just doing it with all the devotees together. And it was really interesting, the lecture that was given in Panihati. I think for me it's easy to, especially in the beginning, to do kirtan and just enjoy it and then get tired and then, okay, you know, walk away after I'm tired. But then he said, you know, no matter what you're doing, it's for Krishna's pleasure, not for your own. So now, like, even when I'm tired, I just still keep going. and Stephanie and I were actually talking about this, I think yesterday, about how when you're doing kirtan, you really... For us, like, that's when we lose most sight of the bodily concept. Because you really don't care what you look like. Like, out on the Ratha Yatra, you don't care. And you're absorbed and...
Very nice. So that takes you outside of yourself. Isn't it amazing that in general, in life, that's when we find happiness, when we get outside of our mind. You know, the prison of our mind. Even in an ordinary relationship, a mother... love for the child. Prabhupada said that's the closest thing to a transcendental experience, because the child becomes the sole object of affection, so much so that the mother is able to forget herself and become occupied. The parents can do. Okay, good. It's much easier. Sankirtan is much easier than having children. I can tell you that from experience. Okay. Very good. What other experiences of samadhi have you had as a devotee?
Sometimes while hearing the lectures, one time I remember when I was hearing Radhanath Maharaj lectures, on, he was describing, glorifying Bhakti Tej Maharaj, his pastimes he gave in Chopati. I was just hearing and I was just so absorbed. I was hearing one after another and it just went on. It was, I think that was really, I felt very good after that.
So hearing and chanting, it's generally easier to get samadhi in chanting than by hearing. But if one can do it by hearing, it's extraordinarily advanced. That's wonderful. Okay, any other samadhi experiences? It can be anything. It doesn't have to be one of the nine processes, I mean directly, or some type of service.
Sometimes when I concentrate in the chanting and I really pray to the Holy Name to hear the chanting, and I just keep chanting and hear the chanting, I go into this state of mind where my whole body becomes numb. And I just, it's almost like a twilight zone where you just, everything stops. And you just listen to the Holy Name.
When you're doing japa.
When you're doing japa, yes. And everything is quiet and peaceful. And all of a sudden, again, my mind comes back. Oh, I need to do this, I need to do that. And I'm like, okay.
So. Wow, I'm really making advances.
Oh!
You start thinking about how great it is that you've reached that state, and then it's all over.
When that happens, one thing you can think of is this, like a child learning to walk. Get up and fall down, get up and fall down. You know, and still the parent is very loving. The parent doesn't say, oh, useless child. You know. Well, if your parent said that, I'm sorry. It's important to have some compassion for oneself. This is what I'm trying to say in simple terms. In other words, that if we get very frustrated with our minds and start fighting, I'm going to teach you a lesson. Now, this just actually agitates the mind more and more. And this is what the mind wants, you know, always trying to create a fight. So if you think of it in terms of like a viral infection, you know, if you get sick, I mean, is it really your fault? You have a disease, so, and the disease affects you. So in spite of that, you go on with your duty. And just pray that Krishna will accept you in that imperfect condition. See what I'm saying? So in other words, it's not possible to defeat the mind by the mind. You just gotta say, okay, I'm not advanced. I'm not able to maintain my focus. So let me just continue trying. And this way the samadhi experience can increase more and more as we chant. But that's part of it, just being forgiving of oneself. Okay. I'm a neophyte, so let me just keep going. Okay, very good. Chanting. Japa, what else? Puts you in samadhi. Shruti Sagar, oh, this is going to be good.
I guess there are many, but some at least. Like, it's interesting. Every Krishna consciousness is so nice and broad, and Krishna gives so much, so many avenues to do service to Him.
Hmm.
First one that comes to mind is chanting and dancing, especially for me. I like dancing. So when we, every Sunday we go and we just chant and dance for Radha Shyam Sundar, and it's like, oh, I wish I could just, sometimes I feel like, oh, you know, this is it, like, just keep dancing. And like that pleasure for dancing for Radha Shyam Sundar is so nice. You know, just dance for them, like, you know, this is there. You know? Like, not like, I'm not taking sannyas, but this is, yeah, it's just so nice. Like, I think, like, I wish I could just keep dancing. Damn these legs which are aching, but I wish I could keep dancing. So, that is it.
There's a verse by Rupa Goswami. Tunde tundavali ratim bitanute tundavali labdayit. Karna Krodha Kadambani. He says, when we chant, we have only one tongue. We need millions of tongues. And when we hear, we have only two ears. We need millions of ears. So he's lamenting, I don't have better resources to use for my hearing and chanting and dancing. And in that verse he also says, Cheta prangani sangani vijayate sarvindriyanam kritin. When the holy name dances in the courtyard of the heart, then all the senses become satisfied, and the mind becomes the mind becomes satisfied, and all the senses become inert. That's the point. So just like this verse, that samadhi experience is being described. No jane janitaki yabdhir amritai krishneti varnandivir. I have no idea how much nectar is contained in these two syllables, Krishna. Very good. So dancing. Any other practical samadhis?
We can absorb our mind in many activities, and just like Sri Sagarpur was mentioning, when we try to absorb our mind in any devotional service, and we forget about like what we are doing, like PhD or anything.
Mm-hmm.
For example, if I read, like our daily life will have many problems, and our mind can be caught up with those problems. But like sometimes, for me, it's anything. But like for one example, if I read Bhagavad Gita or Bhagavatam. And there's just something, and the mind just becomes absorbed that, rather than just engaging our mind in problems which are like maybe symptoms, like we are trying to fight it out. Okay, what's the better thing? What's the best thing? We go into that reading and we forget our problems and absorb our mind in that. I guess that is the way, like to forget our problems.
And absorb your mind in service.
Well, yeah, I guess, but that's good for some time. Again, obviously, you have to come again and deal with the problem.
No, just forget them. That's very nice. So you find in service, you find refuge in devotional service. Is this reading? Please go ahead.
So for example, sometimes on Sunday evening, like afternoon, I'm deciding, should I go to temple or should I work? Should I go to temple or should I work? I'm not able to decide. I want to go, but I have a lot of work also. But still I go sometimes. And then we're doing kirtan there. So like sometimes the things will come in my mind and then it will affect me, like not absorbing my mind in kirtan. But then like, I was just thinking, okay, sometimes the kirtan is so good that I forget about that and we'll deal with it later. And the kirtan also gives us like enthusiasm to deal with the problems later on.
Yes, this is the point.
Or at least a sense of enthusiasm, I get some enthusiasm.
Yes, this is a very, very nice description. I hope you're following this, that there's always this conflict, especially for those who are working or in school. Should I do my work? Should I do my... So what is the proper balance? Tamal Krishna Maharaj had a disciple, a lady who was the wife of a college professor, lived about an hour from the temple in Dallas. And she was very enthusiastic to be a devotee. And her husband was nice, but not so enthusiastic. So she asked him, should I just leave my family? Because my kids are grown, you know. Should I just leave my family and move into the temple? And he said, better that you stay at home and think about the temple than living in the temple and think about home. So, if you're doing work and thinking about the temple, is that better than going to the temple and thinking about work? See? So,
that is there, but when I do my work, mind will sometimes get absorbed in work, but it will again come back to temple.
Okay. Arjuna, let's ask you. Yeah, Mr. Bhatia, would you please answer this question for your son? What would you like to see your son doing?
Both in balance.
A wise answer. So there's this beautiful verse in Ecclesiastes in the Bible. You remember? It was made into a popular song by Pete Seeger. To everything, there is a season and a time to every purpose under heaven. A time to be born, a time to die, a time to reap, a time to sow, etc., etc. Very beautiful poetry. So, yeah, this is the art. Because in Krishna consciousness, everything we do, if you're going to school for Krishna, that's also devotional service. It's not that, you know, you go to the temple and that's service and everything else, and then you walk out and it's Maya. You know, that's the Kanishta mentality, the beginner. But as we advance, we realize we can serve Krishna anywhere and get a taste.
And what if we, obviously that is devotional service, but we have attraction for going to temples still, like, and that is a healthy thing to maintain. Yeah. Like, even while doing our work, we have attraction towards.
We have an attraction to go, like, that's like Tamal Krishna Maharaj's advice.
Okay.
Yeah. If you're not advanced enough to remember Krishna in all circumstances, be in the situation where it will help you the most.
Yeah.
All right, yes, Olivia, can you pass that?
Also, similar to what Nimai Pandit Prabhu was saying, when you're hearing a devotee talk about Krishna, especially for me, like when I'm having an intimate conversation with a devotee and they're sharing their realizations with me, and they're so absorbed in it, and it's just, you can just like see it in their eyes, and like everything that they're saying, it's just, it's like Krishna is like coming through them or something. And then another thing, I think when you're making an offering, like when you're doing Guru Puja, for me it's like a really intimate, special experience. And or like if you're offering some preparation that you've made for Krishna, it's also really nice.
So that's this auspicious moment we were just talking about, doing an offering for Krishna. Okay, very good. So all of those, so you were saying hearing the realizations from another devotee and also making an offering, doing an arti. This is a good thing about what we can do in Krishna House. I just hope everyone can get these kind of experiences, experience samadhi in this variety of ways. There are many things we can do. You know, we may have skills or talents, and devotional service is in and of itself an art. Prabhupada called it the art of living. So learning how to enter samadhi through a variety of services. See, Prabhupada said to be a jack of all trades and a master of one. You know that expression? That's the common expression. If somebody's a jack of all trades, they're little of this and that and the other, but they're not really expert at anything. So he said you should be able to do anything, but be very good at one thing in devotional service. See? So to be able to become absorbed in doing arti, or being able to be absorbed in attending kirtan or chanting japa, these are all trades. You know, we should be able to enter that stage of timeless absorption in any of a variety of ways. But then something that we really want to do for Krishna, in the Nectar of Devotion, Rupa Goswami talks about this ashabanta, having a desire to do something so intense that it brings tears to your eyes. I really want to do this for Krishna. So find out some one thing that you really want to do for Krishna. That puts you in samadhi. And you can always go into it. It's very accessible. You know, for me, that's writing. Writing is my thing that makes all of a sudden time go away and all other considerations go away. And it is in and of itself so pleasurable, you know, at least in the morning hours for me, that I could do it without, you know, ever feeling tired or, you know, wanting to stop. So whatever it might be for you. Just don't neglect all the other things. See? Oh, this is all I have to do for Krishna. I just have to cook, and everything else will take care of it. Well, no, I need to be a little more balanced than that. Okay, what else? Samadhi for Andrea. What is samadhi for you?
I really like doing like spontaneous devotional service. It's really nice.
Describe spontaneous devotional service?
Okay. For example, we were in the class yesterday, and it started at 11, and it was like 1 or 1:30, and my legs were starting to hurt. And Lena's like, oh, I'm going to go take a walk. And I was like, okay, I'll go with you. And as soon as we left the temple, we saw that there was this one guy who was cutting fruit, and he was missing every single finger in his hand. He only had like half fingers, and he was helping cut the fruit for all of the devotees that were trying to get fruit. Whoa. And we first saw the fruit, and we were like, oh, fruit, and we ran over there, you know, just to like eat it, and because we really wanted some fruit. But then we realized that he really needed help, so then we started helping him, and we ended up helping him for like an hour or so, and we cut pears and nectarines and mangoes and cantaloupes and oranges. And we had to deal with a lot of people who were like, I just want mangoes. And I'm like, well, you have to leave some for everybody else. But
that was me.
Yeah, it's just like, give me more mango. But it was so nice to be able to help the devotee who was kind of struggling to keep up and like also be able to serve the devotees who were coming to like take prasadam.
Yeah, so that's what you mean. Yeah, spontaneously.
Yeah.
He's finding some service to do.
That happened a lot this week, and it was really nice. Mm. So I feel like if you have the right state of mind when you're doing service, it can really be a lot more transcendental than just, do you want more chili? You know? It's like, if you think about it for a second, like, they'll hopefully be devotees in their next life or something, you know?
Very good. This is one of the advantages of festivals in particular and living in the temple in general. Prabhupada compared it. He was asked, remember Jadwaita Maharaj said the other morning? He was asked, should a devotee live in the temple? Is it essential to live in the temple to be Krishna conscious? Anyone remember the answer?
Yes. They can live outside.
No, what he said is it's like a stock exchange. So if you're in business, if you go to where there are other people doing business, then you can do business very conveniently. See? You can also do business at home, but it's more convenient if you're at the stock exchange. You can also trade stocks at home, but if you go to the stock exchange, then everybody's into it. So all around you, you have opportunities to make money. You see? So in the same way, this brief part of your life where you're able to live in a temple, it's like a stock exchange. Okay, there's constant opportunities like that, you know, for spontaneous devotional service. And that is the great benefit of being able to live in the association of devotees. Enlightening conversation, spontaneous service. So achieving and living in samadhi is easier. It's also possible at home. If you make your home into a temple, Bhaktivinoda Thakur said, Ye dina grihe bhajana deke grihete golokabhaya. One day I was doing arti and practicing my devotional service at home when all of a sudden my entire house transformed into Goloka Vrindavan. So for, you know, a good balanced life allows you a chance to get your spiritual training in your youth and then take that into your household or ashram and then be able to sustain that for many, many years. Then you can have a good chance of remembering Krishna at the time of death. Whether that happens after you leave household or life, or whether your spouse kills you. Just kidding. Yeah, I agree. The sound vibration is powerful. Here is Anuradha, by the way, who's been in samadhi in the kitchen. Thank you very much. Yes, we brought you some chip rice. Okay, Alan's samadhi. Talk to us.
Sometimes then, like, I find, like, in the middle, I mean, not, like, after, like, you have problems or, like, something that seems really negative and it doesn't seem like it can get much worse, sometimes you get so frustrated and you're trying to control things so much that after a while, you just finally realize that the more frustrated you get, the more you try to control things, the worse things get.
Yeah.
So then you realize after a while you're just like, okay, I'm not in control. And you just let go and just leave it to Krishna. And it's kind of a good feeling. Even though it sounds kind of strange because after problems that a good feeling would come. But sometimes it gets to that point where it's just like, you know, it's just, you're trying so hard and then finally you're like, that's it. Like, and you just let go. Yeah. And then it's kind of feel relief just to have come to that realization for a little bit.
That is very nice. You know, at any time, day or night, we can just say, Krishna, I'm turning it over to you. I surrender. But if we're not habituated to doing that, then Krishna may have to put us in a situation where we'll really be pushed to that point.
Yeah, exactly.
And then, okay, Krishna. So we have the choice. We can either get pushed to that point, or we can just conscientiously, with our intelligence, say, okay, Krishna, I realize I am a very tiny little insignificant spirit soul in a big material cosmos here with no chance of getting out without your mercy. So I'm going to stop thinking I'm such a big shot and just say, okay, really, I can't do anything without your mercy. A nice realization. Clayton has the last word here.